The Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for October is a biography titled The Mother of the Reformation, The Amazing Life and Story of Catherine Luther. This new Reformation resource provides an inside look into the daily lives of Martin and Katie Luther. The Mother of the Reformation is published by Concordia Publishing House. Their phone number, 1-800-325-3040, or you can read an excerpt at issuesetc.org. The Mother of the Reformation, The Issues, Etc. Book of the Month. Welcome back. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues, Etc. It's Tuesday afternoon, October the 1st. Joining us to talk about Christian doctors and the new health care law for the next 10 minutes of the program, Dr. Gene Rudd. He's Senior Vice President of the Christians Medical and Dental Association based in Bristol, Tennessee. Dr. Rudd, welcome back to Issues, Etc.
Todd, good to be with you.
How should we look at this, impending law that's coming that is going to make a lot of changes? Is it too early to tell whether or not the concerns being voiced by some in the medical profession, Christians or people of conscience, whether those concerns are founded?
No, it's not too early to tell. We can already see how the administration is interpreting the law and implementing the law in such a way that it requires people of faith to act against their conscience or run afoul of their rules, not necessarily the law, but their rules. So I think we've already seen the handwriting on the wall when it comes to what the potential complications are, the abuse of conscience, the undermining of First Amendment rights. So, yeah, I don't think it's too early to tell.
So are the two issues really in the fore here, in your opinion, in essence, religious liberty and freedom of conscience?
Well, we're on the top of the list, but the underlying problem with the health care reform law that we currently are trying to implement is that it doesn't address cost issues. If it could address cost issues, there might be ways that it could be fixed in the way it addresses all the other issues, but because it doesn't properly address the cost issues, it's doomed to failure. And that's the main reason we initially pushed to resist the law and now to repeal the law, because it's ultimately not going to help our health care system. In the process of implementing now, some of these foundational freedom issues have come up, and the issues of right of conscience and free exercise have come up, which have further complicated it and made the law untenable.
What do you mean by cost issues? Be more specific, if you would.
Well, right now in this country, our government pays for the care for about 26% of our population, about a fourth. And to do that, we pay taxes. And the amount of taxes that every citizen pays is about three times more per person than the people in Britain and the people in Australia pay to have universal health care. So think of the numbers. We pay three times more to take care of a fourth of our citizens than other developed countries do to take care of all their citizens. And the reason is that our costs are so exorbitantly high. There's a lot of reasons why they're too high. But until we decide to address that issue, we make health care unaffordable for whoever is paying the bill. What we're trying to do right now with the health care reform bill is to use some smoke and mirrors to try to move the monies around to say, well, we'll maybe pay for it this way for a while and this way for a while, or maybe we'll share the wealth or share the cost and responsibility around. Ultimately, the slope in which we're on in terms of health care cost is not sustainable. It wasn't before. That's why we wanted reform. But we want a reform that would deal with that, and it's not. And, you know, economics are ethical issues, and every economic decision is an ethical decision. So that's why we raise the issue of cost as being the most fundamental flaw in the health care reform. We have not ethically provided a reform that's going to take care of our fellow citizens.
So this is a moral issue.
It is absolutely a moral issue.
Okay. So indulge me, if you would.
Sure.
And I understand this totally in terms of being a layperson on the side of outside the medical profession and how it really works, and with no expertise in insurance or any kind of stuff like that. But to me, we have disconnected. As if I go to the mechanic, he charges me for labor and parts, okay, on my car. But we've disconnected the real cost that the physician incurs in applying his trade from what he feels like he has to charge his patients. Is that part of the moral issue here?
Well, Todd, you've touched on something very important. There was a time when healthcare was basically governed by doctors and the values and characters and ethical tenets of healthcare that was overseen by the physicians. There were some problems, of course, but also the economics of that older system back, 30, 40 years ago was cash on the barrelhead. It was an incredible dynamic that controlled the economic transaction. Well, we move from that to where businesses, for various reasons, we don't have time to talk about, but for various reasons, business took over healthcare, and the business profit line became the driving force, and physicians lost their voice in that system by becoming employees to the business owners. Well, now we're on the cusp in our culture of moving from a business-controlled healthcare system to a government-controlled healthcare system, thinking that somehow that's going to bring more satisfaction back into the system. Our prediction is it's going to bring less satisfaction.
So let's talk about those the other issues that attend with this, of course, religious freedom and freedom of conscience. So far, with the attempts to kind of implement a new way of thinking about health care legally, the track record of this administration so far on the issue of the individual health worker's conscience, how would you summarize it?
Well, we're just seeing the tip of the iceberg. When bureaucrats come along and implement the legislation, they have a fairly wide latitude in interpreting it. And they're going to interpret it according to the social agenda of the administration they work for. And we're seeing that in the sense that while the health care bill was promised that it would not be paying for abortion, now with the way the rules are being written, we will all be paying for abortion with our contribution to taxes, our contribution to premiums. In some way, somehow, every person participating is going to be paying for an abortion. That's because some rulemaker somewhere wanted to see that happen. So, yes, the moral implications of how this is going to be applied are considerable. We see that employers who find it morally objectionable to provide certain services, pay for certain services that they find morally objectionable, are now being told, you have to do that. Of course, those cases are working their way through the court. Eventually, there will be a Supreme Court ruling on it. No one knows how it's going to go. But we may lose a very important fundamental First Amendment right, that is free exercise, if the government says, well, we think our social agenda of providing certain services are more important than your First Amendment rights. That's the way the administration is taking this right now.
What would you say to someone who is just embarking on training and education to be a physician in the United States today? What would your advice to him or her be, given what is likely to come in the healthcare system?
Well, I give that advice quite frequently, and it's complicated, but my advice is get there and do make a difference. We need people of character. We need people of conscience. We need people with moral conviction to get in the system and make a difference. The thing is, you just got to avoid being swallowed up by the system and become a puppet in the system. You're going to have to probably stand apart. It's going to be difficult. You're going to have to create health care with a different economic system than what's prevalent today. And you're going to have to go back and make some personal oaths to certain standards that you will keep no matter what the economic circumstances and no matter what some government bureaucracy tells you you've got to do something different. You've got to stick to your convictions.
Is it possible on the cost issue for a physician today to kind of buck the system and say, no, it's going to be cash on the barrelhead. I'll charge my people what it actually costs and alleviate, at least to some degree, mitigate that moral issue?
Well, it is possible, and quite a number of doctors are doing. It's a small percentage now, but the concept is called simple care by some, where they take cash only. The problem is not all doctors could just move into that suddenly. It would really bankrupt the system and provide very poor care for a period of time until it all shook out. But my concern is that if doctors want to sort of pull out of the system, they may also be pulling out of care for people who have no other means of payment except for government payment through Medicare and Medicaid. And right now I'm terribly concerned that we don't abandon those. So we have to do some capitulation with the system so as not to injure the persons that we most care for, and that's our patients.
So then with only 30 seconds here, it sounds like what you're saying is the old Hippocratic oath, first do no harm, really applies more broadly than just not hurting your patients physically.
Indeed. You've got to look at their total care, which is their economic care as well. The Hippocratic Oath, sadly, is not even administered in most medical schools today, so we wonder why we see a character change in the doctors.
Dr. Gene Rudd is Senior Vice President of the Christians Medical and Dental Association based in Bristol, Tennessee. You'll find a link to the Christian Medical and Dental Associations at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Dr. Rudd, thank you very much. Clarified a lot of things for me. Thank you very much.
My pleasure, Todd.
When we come back, we're going to spend some time in the last half hour of the program on this Tuesday afternoon with Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer. He's going to be with us on a regular basis to talk about Christ in the Old Testament. Today, well, we're going to give him a hard one. An obscure prophet, Habakkuk. You remember that name? It stands out, but I doubt anyone could, well, quote more than one verse from Habakkuk. But that one verse seems to be enough. It's quoted by the Apostle Paul several times. When he is teaching and making the case for the central teaching of all Scripture, from this obscure Old Testament prophet Habakkuk, St. Paul pulls out justification by grace through faith for Christ's sake. Was he just cherry-picking? We'll answer that question right after this. Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Pilgrim Lutheran, Santa Monica, California. Emmanuel Lutheran, Terre Haute, Indiana. Trinity Lutheran, San Angelo, Texas. Trinity Lutheran and Emmanuel Lutheran, Holloway, Minnesota. St. John Lutheran, Schaumburg, Illinois. Our Savior Lutheran, Pipestone, Minnesota. Real Lutheran Fellowship, Rochester, Minnesota. Living Word Lutheran Church, The Woodlands, Texas. St. James Lutheran, Logansport, Indiana. St. John's Lutheran, State Center, Iowa, and Trinity Lutheran, West Chicago, Illinois. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, click support, and print a one-page flyer. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll publicize your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. issuesetc.org, click support. The Issues Etc. 300.
The church's music from the second century.
Shepherd of tender youth, guiding in love over truth.
The sixth century. The 12th century.
O come, O come, Emmanuel.
The 16th century.
Lord, keep us steadfast in your word. Help us who might deceive us.
The 21st century. The best of the church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Where Christianity meets culture, you're listening to Issues Etc.
I like to think of the deaconess vocation as driven by two things, the love of Christ and the needs of our neighbor.
Dr. James Buescher, Director of Deaconess Studies at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, on the vocation of deaconess.
First, the deaconess is moved by the love of Christ, who came not to be served, but to serve. Yet I think we can also see the profound needs around us, broken families, loneliness, despair. Deaconesses help the church to become a true family that manifests the love of Christ in our love for one another, and especially for those in need.
If you've ever considered the vocation of deaconess, Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, invites you to prayerfully consider October 10th through the 12th. For more information, call 1-800-481-2155, 1-800-481-2155, or visit ctsfw.edu.